In the Lost Lands, read for you by Claudia Black. You can buy anything you might desire from Grey Alice, but it is better not to. The Lady Mélange did not come herself to Grey Alice. She was said to be a clever and a cautious young woman, as well as exceedingly fair, and she had heard the stories. Those who dealt with Grey Alice did so at their own peril, it was said. Grey Alice did not refuse any of those who came to her, and she always got them what they wanted. Yet somehow, when all was done, those who dealt with Grey Alice were never happy with the things she brought them, the things that they had wanted. The Lady Mélange knew all this, ruling as she did from the high keep built into the side of the mountain. Perhaps that was why she did not come herself. Instead, it was Giray who came calling on Grey Alice that day. Blue Giray, the lady's champion, foremost of the paladins who secured her high keep and led her armies into battle, captain of her color guard. Giray wore an underlining of pale blue silk beneath the deep azure plate of his enameled armor. The sigil on his shield was a maelstrom done in 100 subtle hues of blue, and a sapphire as large as an eagle's eye was set in the hilt of his sword. When he entered Grey Alice's presence and removed his helmet, his eyes were a perfect match for the jewel in his sword, though his hair was a startling and inappropriate red. Grey Alice received him in the small, ancient stone house she kept in the dim heart of the town beneath the mountain. She waited for him in a windowless room, full of dust and the smell of mould, seated in an old high-backed chair that seemed to dwarf her small, thin body. In her lap was a grey rat, the size of a small dog. She stroked it languidly as Giray entered and took off his helmet and let his bright blue eyes adjust to the dimness. "Yes," Grey Alice said at last.
"You are the one they call Grey Alice," Giray said.
"I am."
"I am Giray. I come at the behest of the Lady Mélange."
"The wise and beautiful Lady Mélange," said Grey Alice. The rat's fur was soft as velvet beneath her long pale fingers. "Why does the lady send her champion to one as poor and plain as I?"
"Even in the keep, we hear tales of you," said Giray.
"Yes?"
"It is said, for a price, you will sell things strange and wonderful."
"Does the Lady Mélange wish to buy?"
"It is said also that you have powers, Grey Alice. It is said that you are not always as you sit before me now, a slender woman of indeterminate age, clad all in grey. It is said that you become young and old, as you wish. It is said that sometimes you are a man, or an old woman, or a child. It is said that you know the secrets of shape-shifting, that you go abroad as a great cat, a bear, a bird, and that you change your skin at will, not as a slave to the moon like the werefolk in the Lost Lands."
"All of these things are said," Grey Alice acknowledged. Giray removed a small leather bag from his belt and stepped closer to where Grey Alice sat. He loosened the drawstring that held the bag shut and spilled out the contents on the table by her side. Gems, a dozen of them, in as many colors. Grey Alice lifted one and held it to her eye, watching the candle flame through it. When she placed it back among the others, she nodded at Giray and said, "What would the lady buy of me?"
"Your secret," Giray said, smiling. "The Lady Mélange wishes to shapeshift."
"She is said to be young and beautiful," Grey Alice replied. "Even here beyond the keep, we hear many tales of her. She has no mate, but many lovers. All of her color guard are said to love her, among them yourself. Why should she wish to change?"
"You misunderstand. The Lady Mélange does not seek youth or beauty. No change could make her fairer than she is. She wants from you the power to become a beast, a wolf."
"Why?" asked Grey Alice.
"That is none of your concern. Will you sell her this gift?" I refuse no one, said Grey Alice. Leave the gems here, return in 1 month, and I shall give you what the Lady Melange desires. Jure nodded. His face looked thoughtful. You refuse no one? No one. He grinned crookedly, reached into his belt, and extended his hand to her. Within the soft blue crushed velvet of his gloved palm rested another jewel, a sapphire even larger than the one set in the hilt of his sword. Accept this as payment, if you will. I wish to buy for myself. Grey Alice took the sapphire from his palm, held it up between thumb and forefinger against the candle flame, nodded, and dropped it among the other jewels. What would you have, Jure? His grin spread wider. I would have you fail, he said. I do not want the Lady Melange to have this power she seeks. Grey Alice regarded him evenly, her steady grey eyes fixed on his own cold blue ones. You wear the wrong colour, Jure, she said at last. Blue is the colour of loyalty, yet you betray your mistress and the mission she entrusted to you. I am loyal, Jure protested. I know what is good for her, better than she knows herself. Melange is young and foolish. She thinks it can be kept secret. When she finds this power she seeks, she is wrong, and when the people know, they will destroy her. She cannot rule these folk by day and tear out their throats by night. Grey Alice considered that for a time in silence, stroking the great rat that lay across her lap. You lie, Jure, she said when she spoke again. The reasons you give are not your true reasons. Jure frowned. His gloved hand almost casually came to rest on the hilt of his sword. His thumb stroked the great sapphire set there. I will not argue with you, he said gruffly. If you will not sell to me, give me back my gem and be damned with you. I refuse no one, Grey Alice replied. Jure scowled in confusion. I shall have what I ask. You shall have what you want. Excellent, said Jure, grinning again. In 1 month, then. 1 month, agreed Grey Alice. And so Grey Alice sent the word out in ways that only Grey Alice knew. The message passed from mouth to mouth, through the shadows and alleys and the secret sewers of the town, and even to the tall houses of scarlet wood and coloured glass where dwelled the noble and the rich. Soft grey rats with tiny human hands whispered it to sleeping children, and the children shared it with each other and chanted a strange new chant when they skipped rope. The word drifted to all the army outposts to the east and rode west with the great caravans into the heart of the old empire of which the town beneath the mountain was only the smallest part. Huge, leathery birds with the cunning faces of monkeys flew the word south, over the forests and the rivers, to a dozen different kingdoms where men and women as pale and terrible as Grey Alice herself heard it in the solitude of their towers. Even north, past the mountains, even into the Lost Lands, the word travelled. It did not take long. In less than 2 weeks, he came to her. I can lead you to what you seek, he told her. I can find you a werewolf. He was a young man, slender and beardless. He dressed in the worn leathers of the rangers who lived and hunted in the windswept desolation beyond the mountains. His skin had the deep tan of a man who spent all his life outdoors, though his hair was as white as mountain snow and fell about his shoulders tangled and unkempt. He wore no armor and carried a long knife instead of a sword, and he moved with a wary grace. Beneath the pale strands of hair that fell across his face, his eyes were dark and sleepy. Though his smile was open and amiable, there was a curious indolence to him as well, and a dreamy, sensuous set to his lips when he thought no one was watching. He named himself Boyce. Grey Alice watched him and listened to his words and finally said, Where? A week's journey north, Boyce replied. In the Lost Lands. Do you dwell in the Lost Lands, Boyce? Grey Alice asked of him. No, They are no fit place for dwelling. I have a home here in town, but I go beyond the mountains often, Grey Alice. I am a hunter. I know the Lost Lands well, and I know the things that live there. You seek a man who walks like a wolf. I can take you to him, but we must leave at once if we are to arrive before the moon is full. Grey Alice rose. My wagon is loaded, my horses are fed and shod. Let us depart, then. Boyce brushed the fine white hair from his eyes and smiled lazily. The mountain pass was high and steep and rocky, and in places barely wide enough for Grey Alice's wagon to pass. The wagon was a cumbersome thing, long and heavy and entirely enclosed, once brightly painted, but now faded so by time and weather that its wooden walls were all a dreary grey. It rode on 6 clattering iron wheels, and the 2 horses that pulled it were of necessity monsters half again the size of normal beasts. Even so, they kept a slow pace through the mountains. Boyce, who had no horse, walked ahead or alongside, and sometimes rode up next to Grey Alice. The wagon groaned and creaked. It took them 3 days to ascend to the highest point of the mountain road, where they looked through a cleft in the mountains out onto the wide barren plains of the Lost Lands. It took them 3 more days to descend.
Now we will make better time, Boyce promised Grey Alice when they reached the Lost Lands themselves. Here the land is flat and empty, and the going will be easy. A day now, perhaps 2, and you shall have what you seek.
Yes, said Grey Alice. They filled the water barrels full before they left the mountains, and Boyce went hunting in the foothills and returned with 3 black rabbits and the carcass of a small deer, curiously deformed. And when Grey Alice asked him how he had brought them down with only a knife as a weapon, Boyce smiled and produced a sling and sent several small stones whistling through the air. Grey Alice nodded. They made a small fire and cooked 2 of the rabbits and salted the rest of the meat. The next morning at dawn they set off into the Lost Lands. Here they moved quickly indeed. The Lost Lands were a cold and empty place, and the earth was packed as hard and firm as the roads that wound through the empire beyond the mountains. The wagon rolled along briskly, creaking and clattering, shaking a bit from side to side as it went. In the Lost Lands there were no thickets to cut through, no rivers to cross. Desolation lay before them on all sides, seemingly endless. From time to time they saw a grove of trees, gnarled and twisted altogether, limbs heavy with swollen fruit with skin the colour of indigo, shining. From time to time they clattered through a shallow, rocky stream, none deeper than ankle level. From time to time, vast patches of white fungus blanketed the desolate grey earth. Yet all these things were rare. Mostly, there was only the emptiness, the shuddering, dead plains all around them, and the winds. The winds were terrible in the Lost Lands. They blew constantly, and they were cold and bitter, and sometimes they smelled of ash, and sometimes they seemed to howl and shriek like some poor, doomed soul. At last, they had come far enough so Grey Alice could see the end of the Lost Lands. Another line of mountains far, far north of them, a vague bluish-white line across the grey horizon. They could travel for weeks and not reach those distant peaks, Grey Alice knew, yet the Lost Lands were so flat and so empty that even now they could make them out, dimly. At dusk, Grey Alice and Boyce made their camp just beyond a grove of the curious tortured trees they had glimpsed on their journey north. The trees gave them a partial respite from the fury of the wind, but even so they could hear it keening and pulling at them, twisting their fire into wild, suggestive shapes. These lands are lost indeed, Grey Alice said as they ate. They have their own beauty, Boyce replied. He impaled a chunk of meat on the end of his long knife and turned it above the fire. Tonight, if the clouds pass, you will see the lights rippling above the northern mountains, all purple and grey and maroon, twisting like curtains caught in this endless wind.
I have seen those lights before, said Grey Alice.
I have seen them many times, Boyce said.
He bit off a piece of meat, pulling at it with his teeth, and a thin line of grease ran down from the corner of his mouth. He smiled.
You come to the Lost Lands often, Grey Alice said.
Boy shrugged.
I hunt.
Does anything live here? Asked Grey Alice. Live amidst all this desolation?
Oh, yes, Boyce replied. You must have eyes to find it. You must know the Lost Lands, but it is there. Strange, twisted beasts never seen beyond the mountains. Things out of legends and nightmares. Enchanted things and accursed things. Things whose flesh is impossibly rare and impossibly delicious. Humans, too. Or things that are almost human. Werefolk and changelings and grey shapes that walk only by twilight, shuffling things half-living and half-dead. His smile was gentle and taunting.
But you are Grey Alice, and all this you must know. It is said you came out of the Lost Lands yourself once, long ago.
It is said, Grey Alice answered.
We are alike, you and I, Boyce replied. I love the town, the people, song and laughter and gossip. I savour the comforts of my house, good food and good wine. I relish the players who come each fall to the High Keep and perform for the Lady Melange. I like fine clothes and jewels and soft, pretty women. Yet part of me is only at home here in the Lost Lands, listening to the wind, watching the shadows warily each dusk, dreaming things the townsfolk never dare.
Full dark had fallen by then. Boyce lifted his knife and pointed north to where dim lights had begun to glow faintly against the mountains.
See there, Grey Alice. See how the lights shimmer and shift. You can see shapes in them if you watch long enough. Men and women and things that are neither moving against the darkness. Their voices are carried by the wind. Watch and listen. There are great dramas in those lights. Plays grander and stranger than any ever performed on the ladies' stage. Do you hear? Do you see?
Grey Alice sat on the hard-packed earth with her legs crossed and her grey eyes unreadable, watching in silence. Finally she spoke.
Yes,
she said, and that was all. Boyce sheathed his long knife and came around the campfire. It had died now to a handful of dim reddish embers to sit beside her.
I knew you would see, he said. We are alike, you and I. We wear the flesh of the city, but in our blood, the cold wind of the Lost Lands is blowing always. I could see it in your eyes, Grey Alice.
She said nothing. She sat and watched the lights, feeling the warm presence of Boyce beside her. After a time, he put an arm about her shoulders and Grey Alice did not protest. Later, much later, when the fire had gone entirely dark and the night had grown cold, Boyce reached out and cupped her chin within his hand and turned her face to his. He kissed her, once, gently, full upon her thin lips. And Grey Alice woke as if from a dream and pushed him back upon the ground and undressed him with sure, deft hands and took him then and there. Boyce let her do it all. He lay upon the chill, hard ground with his hands clasped behind his head, his eyes dreamy and his lips curled up in a lazy, complacent smile, while Grey Alice rode him, slowly at first, then faster and faster, building to a shuddering climax. When she came, her body went stiff and she threw her head back. Her mouth opened as if to cry out, but no sound came forth. There was only the wind, cold and wild, and the cry it made was not a cry of pleasure. The next day dawned chill and overcast. The sky was full of thin, twisted grey clouds that raced before them faster than clouds ought to race. What light filtered through seemed wan and colourless. Boyce walked beside the wagon while Grey Alice drove it forward at a leisurely pace.
We are close now, Boyce told her. Very close.
Yes. Boyce smiled up at her. His smile had changed since they had become lovers. It was fond and mysterious and more than a bit indulgent. It was a smile that presumed.
Tonight, he told her.
The moon will be full tonight, Grey Alice said. Boyce smiled and pushed the hair from his eyes and said nothing.
Well before dusk, they drew up amidst the ruins of some nameless town long forgotten even by those who dwelled in the Lost Lands. Little remained to disturb the sweeping emptiness, only a huddle of broken masonry, forlorn and pitiful. The vague outlines of town walls could still be discerned, and one or two chimneys remained standing, jagged and half-shattered, gnawing at the horizon like rotten black teeth. No shelter was to be found here, no life. When Grey Alice had fed her horses, she wandered through the ruins but found little. No pottery, no rusted blades, no books, not even bones. Nothing at all to hint of the people who had once lived here, if people they had been. The Lost Lands had sucked the life out of this place and blown away even the ghosts, so not a trace of memory remained. The shrunken sun was low on the horizon, obscured by scuttling clouds, and the scene spoke to her with the wind's voice, cried out in loneliness and despair. Grey Alice stood for a long time, alone, watching the sun sink while her thin, tattered cloak billowed behind her and the cold wind bit through into her soul. Finally, she turned away and went back to the wagon. Boyce had built a fire, and he sat in front of it, mulling some wine in a copper pot, adding spices from time to time. He smiled his new smile for Grey Alice when she looked at him. "The wind is cold," he said. "I thought a hot drink would make our meal more pleasant." Grey Alice glanced away towards the setting sun, then back at Boyce. "This is not the time or the place for pleasure, Boyce. Dusk is all but upon us, and soon the full moon shall rise." "Yes," said Boyce. He ladled some of the hot wine into his cup and tried a swallow. "No need to rush off hunting, though," he said, smiling lazily. "The wolf will come to us. Our scent will carry far in this wind, in this emptiness, and the smell of fresh meat will bring him running." Grey Alice said nothing. She turned away from him and climbed the three wooden steps that led up to the interior of her wagon. Inside, she lit a brazier carefully and watched the light shift and flicker against the weathered grey wallboards and the pile of furs on which she slept. When the light had grown steady, Grey Alice slid back a wall panel and stared at the long row of tattered garments that hung on pegs within the narrow closet. Cloaks and capes and billowing loose shirts, strangely cut gowns and suits that clung like a second skin from head to toe, leather and fur and feathers. She hesitated briefly, then reached in and chose a great cloak made of 1,000 long silver feathers, each one tipped delicately with black. Removing her simple cloth cloak, Grey Alice fastened the flowing feathered garment at her neck. When she turned, it billowed all about her, and the dead air inside the wagon stirred and briefly seemed alive before the feathers settled and stilled once again. Then Grey Alice bent and opened a huge oaken chest bound in iron and leather. From within, she drew out a small box. 10 rings rested against worn grey felt, each set with a long, curving silver claw instead of a stone. Grey Alice donned them methodically, one ring to each finger, and when she rose and clenched her fists, the claws shone dimly and menacingly in the light from the brazier. Outside it was twilight. Boyce had not prepared any food, Grey Alice noted as she took her seat across the fire from where the pale-haired ranger sat quaffing his hot wine. "A beautiful cloak," Boyce observed amiably. "Yes," said Grey Alice.
"No cloak will help you when he comes, though."
Grey Alice raised her hand, made a fist. The silver claws caught the firelight, gleamed.
"Ah," said Boyce. "Silver."
"Silver," agreed Grey Alice, lowering her hand.
"Still," Boyce said, "others have come against it armed with silver. Silver swords, silver knives, arrows tipped with silver. They are dust now, all those silvered warriors. He gorged himself on their flesh."
Grey Alice shrugged. Boyce stared at her speculatively for a time, then smiled and went back to his wine. Grey Alice drew her cloak more tightly about herself to keep out the cold wind. After a while, staring off into the far distance, she saw lights moving against the northern mountains. She remembered the stories that she had seen there, the tales that Boyce had conjured for her from the play of coloured shadows. They were grim and terrible stories. In the Lost Lands, there was no other kind. At last, another light caught her eye, a spreading dimness in the east, wan and ominous. Moonrise. Greyalis stared calmly across the dying campfire. Boyce had begun to change. She watched his body twist as bone and muscle changed within, watched his pale white hair grow longer and longer, watched his lazy smile turn into a wide red grin that split his face, saw the canines lengthen and the tongue come rolling out, watched the wine cup fall as his hands melted and writhed and became paws. He started to say something once, but no words came out. Only a low, coarse snarl of laughter, half human and half animal. Then he threw back his head and howled, and he ripped at his clothing until it lay in tatters all about him, and he was Boyce no longer. Across the fire from Grey Alice, the wolf stood, a great, shaggy white beast, half again the size of an ordinary wolf, with a savage red slash of a mouth and glowing scarlet eyes. Grey Alice stared into those eyes as she rose and shook the dust from her feathered cloak. They were knowing eyes, cunning, wise. Inside those eyes she saw a smile that presumed. A smile that presumed too much. The wolf howled once again, a long, wild sound that melted into the wind. And then he leapt, straight across the embers of the fire he had built. Grey Alice threw her arms out, her cloak bunched in her hands, and changed. Her change was faster than his had been. Over almost as soon as it had begun, but for Grey Alice, it lasted an eternity. First there was a strange, choking, clinging feeling as the cloak adhered to her skin, then dizziness and a curious, liquid weakness as her muscles began to run and flow and reshape themselves. And finally, exhilaration, as the power rushed into her and came coursing through her veins, a wine fiercer and hotter and wilder than the poor stuff Boyce had mulled above their fire. She beat her vast, silvery wings, each pinion tipped with black, and the dust stirred and swirled as she rose up into the moonlight, up to safety, high above the white wolf's bound, up and up until the ruins shrunk to insignificance far beneath her. The wind took hold of her, caressed her with trembling, icy hands, and she yielded herself to it and soared. Her great wings filled with the dread melody of the Lost Lands, carrying her higher and higher. Her cruel, curving beak opened and closed and opened again, though no sound came forth. She wheeled across the sky, drunken with flight. Her eyes, sharper than any human eyes could be, saw far into the distance, spied out the secrets of every shadow, glimpsed all the dying and half-dead things that stirred and shambled across the barren face of the Lost Lands. The curtains of light to the north danced before her, a thousand times brighter and more gorgeous than they had been before when she had only the dim eyes of the little thing called Grey Alice to perceive them with. She wanted to fly to them, to soar north and north and north, to cavort among those lights, shredding them into glowing strips with her talons. She lifted her talons as if in challenge. Long and wickedly curved they were and razor sharp, and the moonlight flashed along their length, pale upon the silver. And she remembered then, and she wheeled about in a great circle, reluctantly, and turned away from the beckoning lights of the Northlands. Her wings beat and beat again, and she began to descend, shrieking down through the night air, plunging toward her prey. She saw him far beneath her, a pale white shape hurtling away from the wagon, away from the fire, seeking safety in the shadows and the dark places. But there was no safety in the Lost Lands. He was strong and untiring, and his long, powerful legs carried him forward in a steady, swift lope that ate up the miles as if they were nothing. Already he had come a long way from their camp, but as fast as he was, she was faster. He was only a wolf after all, and she was the wind itself. She descended in a dead silence, cutting through the wind like a knife, silver talons outstretched. But he must have spied her shadow streaking towards him, etched clear by the moonlight, for as she closed, he spurted forward wildly, driven by fear. It was useless. He was running full out when she passed over him, raking him with her talons. They cut through fur and twisted flesh like 10 bright silver swords, and he broke stride and staggered and went down. She beat her wings and circled overhead for another pass, and as she did, the wolf regained his feet and stared up at her terrible silhouette, dark against the moon, his eyes brighter now than ever, turned feverish by fear. He threw back his head and howled a broken, bloody howl that cried for mercy. She had no mercy in her. Down she came and down, talons drenched with blood, her beak open to rend and tear. The wolf waited for her and leapt up to meet her dive, snarling, snapping. But he was no match for her. She slashed at him in passing, evading him easily, opening 5 more long gashes that quickly welled with blood. The next time she came around, he was too weak to run, too weak to rise against her. But he watched her turn and descend, and his huge, shaggy body trembled just before she struck. Finally, his eyes opened, blurred and weak. He groaned and moved feebly. It was daylight, and he was back in the camp, lying beside the fire. Grey Alice came to him when she heard him stir, knelt, and lifted his head. She held a cup of wine to his lips until he had drunk his fill. When Boyce lay back again, she could see the wonder in his eyes, the surprise that he still lived.
"You knew," he said hoarsely. You knew what I was."
"Yes," said Grey Alice. She was herself once more, a slender, small, somehow ageless woman with wide grey eyes clad in faded cloth. The feathered cloak was hung away, the silver claws no longer adorned her fingers.
Boyce tried to sit up, winced at the pain, and settled back onto the blanket she had laid beneath him.
"I thought I was dead," he said.
"You were close to dead," Grey Alice replied.
"Silver," he said bitterly. "Silver cuts and burns so."
"Yes."
"But you saved me," he said, confused.
"I changed back to myself and brought you back and tended you." Boyce smiled, though it was only a pale ghost of his old smile.
"You change at will," he said wonderingly. "Ah, there is a gift I would kill for, Grey Alice."
She said nothing.
"It was too open here," he said. "I should have taken you elsewhere, if there had been cover, buildings, a forest, anything. Then you should not have had such an easy time with me."
"I have other skins," Grey Alice replied, "a bear, a cat. It would not have mattered."
"Ah," said Boyce. He closed his eyes. When he opened them again, he forced a twisted smile. "You were beautiful, Grey Alice. I watched you fly for a long time before I realized what it meant, and began to run. It was hard to tear my eyes from you. I knew you were the doom of me, but still I could not look away. So beautiful. All smoke and silver with fire in your eyes. The last time, as I watched you swoop towards me, I was almost glad. Better to perish at the hands of she who is so terrible and fine, I thought, than by some dirty little swordsman with his sharpened silver stick."
"I am sorry," said Grey Alice.
"No," Boyce said quickly. "It is better that you saved me. I will mend quickly, you will see. Even silver wounds bleed but briefly. Then we will be together."
"You are still weak," Grey Alice told him. "Sleep."
"Yes," said Boyce.
He smiled at her and closed his eyes. Hours had passed when Boyce finally woke again. He was much stronger, his wounds all but mended. But when he tried to rise, he could not. He was bound in place, spread-eagled, hands and feet tied securely to stakes driven into the hard grey earth. Grey Alice watched him make the discovery, heard him cry out in alarm. She came to him, held up his head, and gave him more wine. When she moved back, his head twisted around wildly, staring at his bonds and then at her. "What have you done?" he cried. Grey Alice said nothing. "Why?" he asked. "I do not understand, Grey Alice, why? You saved me, tended me, and now I am bound."
"You would not like my answer, Boyce."
"The moon," he said wildly. "You are afraid of what might happen tonight when I change again." He smiled, pleased to have figured it out. "You are being foolish. I would not harm you, not now, after what has passed between us, after what I know. We belong together, Grey Alice. We are alike, you and I. We have watched the lights together, and I have seen you fly. We must have trust between us. Let me loose."
Grey Alice frowned and sighed, and gave no other answer.
Boyce stared at her, uncomprehending. "Why?" he asked again. "Untie me, Alice. Let me prove the truth of my words. You need not fear me."
"I do not fear you, Boyce," she said sadly.
"Good," he said eagerly. "Then free me and change with me. Become a great cat tonight and run beside me. Hunt with me. I can lead you to prey you never dreamed of. There is so much we can share. You have felt how it is to change. You know the truth of it. You have tasted the power, the freedom, seen the lights from a beast's eyes, smelled fresh blood, gloried in a kill. You know the freedom, the intoxication of it, all the... You know."
"I know," Grey Alice acknowledged.
"Then free me. We are meant for one another, you and I. We will live together, love together, hunt together."
Grey Alice shook her head.
"I do not understand," Boyce said. He strained upward wildly at his bonds and swore, then sunk back again. "Am I hideous? Do you find me evil? Unattractive?"
"No."
"Then what?" he said bitterly. "Other women have loved me, have found me handsome, rich, beautiful ladies, the finest in the land. All of them have wanted me, even when they knew."
"But you have never returned that love, Boyce," she said.
"No," he admitted. "I have loved them after a fashion. I have never betrayed their trust, if that is what you think. I find my prey here in the Lost Lands, not from among those who care for me."
Boyce felt the weight of Grey Alice's eyes and continued.
"How could I love them more than I did?" he said passionately. "They could know only half of me, only the half that lived in town and loved wine and song and perfumed sheets. The rest of me lived out here in the Lost Lands and knew things that they could never know. Poor soft things. I told them so, those who pressed me hard. To join with me wholly, they must run and hunt beside me. Like you. Let me go, Grey Alice. Soar for me. Watch me run. Hunt with me."
Grey Alice rose and sighed. "I am sorry, Boyce. I would spare you if I could. But what must happen, must happen. Had you died last night, it would have been useless. Dead things have no power. Night and day, black and white, they are weak. All strength derives from the realm between, from twilight, from shadow, from the terrible place between life and death. From the grey, Boyce. From the grey." He wrenched at his bonds again savagely and began to weep and curse and gnash his teeth. Grey Alice turned away from him and sought out the solitude of her wagon. There she remained for hours, sitting alone in the darkness and listening to Boyce swear and cry out to her with threats and pleadings and professions of love. Grey Alice stayed inside until well after moonrise. She did not want to watch him change, watch his humanity pass from him for the last time. At last his cries had become howls, bestial and abandoned and full of pain. That was when Grey Alice finally re-emerged. The full moon cast a wan, pale light over the scene. Bound to the hard ground, the great white wolf writhed and howled and struggled and stared at her out of hungry, scarlet eyes. Grey Alice walked toward him calmly. In her hand was the long silver skinning knife, its blade engraved with fine and graceful runes. When he finally stopped struggling, the work went more quickly, but it still was a long and bloody night. She killed him in the instant she was done, before the dawn came and changed him and gave him back a human voice to cry his agony. Then Graealis hung up the pelt and brought out tools and dug a deep, deep grave in the packed cold earth. She piled stones and broken pieces of masonry on top of it to protect him from the things that roamed the Lost Lands, the ghouls and the carrion crows and the other creatures that did not flinch at dead flesh. It took her most of the day to bury him, for the ground was very hard indeed, and even as she worked, she knew it was a futile labor. And when at last the work was done, and dusk had almost come again, she went once more into her wagon and returned wearing the great cloak of 1,000 silver feathers tipped with black. Then she changed and flew and flew, a fierce and tireless flight, bathed in strange lights and wedded to the dark. All night she flew beneath a full and mocking moon, and just before dawn she cried out once, a shrill scream of despair and anguish that rang and keened on the sharp edge of the wind and changed its sound forever. Perhaps Jiray was afraid of what she might give him, for he did not return to Graealis alone. He brought two other knights with him, a huge man all in white, whose shield showed a skull carved out of ice, and another in crimson whose sigil was a burning man. They stood at the door, helmeted and silent, while Jiray approached Graealis warily. "Well?" he demanded. Across her lap was a wolfskin, the pelt of some huge, massive beast, all white as mountain snow. Graealis rose and offered the skin to Blue Jiray, draping it across his outstretched arm. "Tell the Lady Melange to cut herself and drip her own blood onto the skin. Do this at moonrise when the moon is full, and then the power will be hers. She need only wear the skin as a cloak, and will the change thereafter. Day or night, full moon or no moon, it makes no matter." Jiray looked at the heavy white pelt and smiled a hard smile.
"A wolfskin, huh? I had not expected that. I thought perhaps a potion, a spell."
"No," said Graealis. "The skin of a werewolf."
"A werewolf?"
Jiray's mouth twisted curiously, and there was a sparkle in his deep sapphire eyes.
"Well, Graealis, you have done what the Lady Melange asked, but you have failed me. I did not pay you for success. Return my gem."
"No," said Graealis. "I have earned it, Jiray."
"I do not have what I asked for."
"You have what you wanted, and that is what I promised." Her grey eyes met his own without fear.
"You thought my failure would help you get what you truly wanted, and that my success would doom you."
"You were wrong."
Jiray looked amused.
"And what do I truly desire?"
"The Lady Melange," said Graealis.
"You have been one lover among many, but you wanted more. You wanted all. You knew you stood second in her affections. I have changed that. Return to her now and bring her the thing she has bought." That day, there was bitter lamentation in the high keep on the mountain when Blue Jiray knelt before the Lady Melange and offered her a white wolfskin. But when the screaming and the wailing and the mourning was done, she took the great pale cloak and bled upon it and learned the ways of change. It is not the union she desired, but it is a union nonetheless. So every night she prowls the battlements and the mountainside, and the townsfolk say her howling is wild with grief. And Blue Jiray, who wed her a month after Graealis returned from the Lost Lands, sits beside a madwoman in the great hall by day and locks his doors by night in terror of his wife's hot red eyes, and does not hunt any more, or laugh, or lust. You can buy anything you might desire from Graealis, but it is better not to.